Do you think that I have come to establish peace on the earth? I think most people would say, yes. I mean, we sing about it in Christmas, right? Peace on earth and goodwill to man. Christ, the Prince of Peace, has been born among us. Emmanuel, God with us. Christ is the Prince that has promised peace on the earth. So what is this about division, being a cause of division, and praying for fire to come down upon the earth? Did Luke catch Jesus on a bad day? Is he in a bad mood? What happened to the Prince of Peace? And what's with this household division? Doesn't seem to make any sense. We thought you did come to establish peace on the earth. So why is there so much war and division? And based on what? This is the heart of the question. We oftentimes experience division within our homes, but it's more often than not a consequence and fruit of sin, of slavery to sin, whatever that may be in all of its many forms. When Luke wrote this gospel, he was writing primarily to a pagan community which had converted to Christianity at a time when being Christian was a capital offense. Because Christians declared Jesus as Lord, but Romans had to declare Caesar is Lord. And by refusing to worship Caesar and choosing to worship Christ, the Roman Empire had decided crucifixion for the non-citizen, decapitation for the citizen. Hence how Peter died by the cross and Jesus, and how Paul was killed by the sword, being a Roman citizen. And so these former pagans had left behind their life of sin, sexual excess, gluttony, drunkenness, and the rest. And on top of that, not everyone in the home converted. And so you'd have a son who converted to be a Christian and the father who did not. And the father threatens the son, unless you come back to worship the Roman gods and leave this foolishness of Christianity behind, I will report you to the government. And in doing so, guaranteeing his death. And it happened a lot. It was happening in the community that Luke was writing to. Not everyone in the household converted. And when that happened, the Christian had to decide, is Jesus Lord, or will I put my family first? Is Christ my Savior, or I trust myself to the Roman Empire? Do I agree to the division this is going to cause by following him, or do I try to play peacemaker and compromise who I am and the truth for the sake of, quote unquote, keeping our family together? It's a challenge and a problem that we still have today, although in a different context, but the same reality. In the first reading today from the prophet Jeremiah, Jeremiah was hated by his own people, and the princes said to the king, let's put him to death. He's demoralizing the soldiers who are left in the city and demoralizing the people. Shut him up. Why? Well, Jeremiah was called to be a prophet who had no training whatsoever to do so. He tended sycamore trees, a very menial, simple, basic task where you climb up sycamore trees, you put little holes around the skin of the fruit, which allows it to then expand and become edible, and it was the food of the poor. He had no education, no formal training in being a prophet or knowledge of the scriptures, and yet God calls him anyway. At a time when Israel was being rampantly unfaithful to God and breaking his commandments. And so Jeremiah spoke from the heart of God. You must leave your sinful ways. You must keep the commandments, or God will allow your enemies to conquer you. Israel is about to go to war with their enemies. And Jeremiah tells the soldiers, you will all be slaughtered because you are unfaithful to God and you will not keep his commandments. And this city will be destroyed. No one wanted to hear that. They needed to be animated, encouraged, strengthened for battle. And the prophet of God is telling them, you've already lost. And that's why they wanted to shut him up, because he was speaking the truth. The people were not willing to stop their sin or keep the commandments. They thought in our power, in our swords, in our chariots, we will conquer, we will win. It will be us who fight the battle. And Jeremiah told them, you've already lost. God alone can defend us. God alone will win the victory. But you put him second by not keeping his commands. Well, they hated him for it, but Jeremiah was right, and they were conquered. And so they expel him to Egypt, casting him away. And even in Egypt, he tells the exiled Israelites the same thing. You have left your God. You have been unfaithful to the commandments. You will be destroyed in your sin, not by God, but by a consequence of your own sin. God's favor will pull away from you because you refuse to respond to his love. You've walked away from him, and you will bear the fruits of your decision. They were so sick of Jeremiah that his own people ultimately stoned him to death and killed him in Egypt. What does that mean for you and I? Well, if you're living the gospel, if you're following God's commands in this world, you will experience persecution. Now you may say, well, I already suffer, Father. Well, ask yourself, is it because you've been faithful to God's commands and created enemies by doing so? Or is it simply because we choose to live our own life and the fruits of sin bring its own suffering of hopelessness and all sorts of sadness and darkness? You see, when we follow Christ faithfully in this world, we will inevitably be persecuted, just as Jesus was, for speaking the truth. So, when I was in high school, everybody's cheating on the test in my class, and they want to share the answers with me. And I tell them, no, I studied. I'm going to do this honestly. Oh, boy, look at the saint. He's better than us, right? He won't cheat like the rest of us. Oh, you know, or the girl who decides to dress modestly to show her person rather than her parts. The clothes isn't skin tight, pushed in, pushed up, pushed out. And she walks in her dignified, beautiful outfit that emphasizes her person. And her friends say, oh, here comes the nun in her habit. God forbid she show any skin. Here comes the nun. Here comes Mother Teresa. You're at work and your coworkers are lying on their hours, cheating or stealing, doing the least amount possible for the most amount of money. And you refuse to do that. You work harder than any of them. You work longer than any of them. You make less money for more effort. You suffer because of it, because you do it out of love for God. And your coworkers hate you because you make them look bad. You show their bosses what they could be doing, but they're not. And you create enemies inevitably. You have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and they expect you to act like you're married. You know what I mean. And as a Christian, you tell them, I believe in God and love him more than you. And because of that, if you love me, you'll wait until we're married. Oh, excuse me, Mother Teresa. I'll go find someone else then. Oh, I'll lose this boyfriend. I'll lose this girlfriend if I don't give in to their advances and live like everyone else does. Who are you? What makes you so special? Everyone else does this. Really? Come on. You're going to make me wait until we're married? Yes, because I believe in the sixth commandment and I believe in God's teachings. Okay, Mother Teresa, good luck with that. If you're faithful to God's commands, you will suffer because this world is opposed to him. Even among Catholics, they will ridicule you. How many kids are you going to have? You already have four. You don't have to repopulate the earth. I'm being generous with the gift of life that God has gifted us with. I want to raise up saints in heaven. I'm not going to use contraception. I'm not going to sterilize myself because fertility is a gift of life and health, and it comes from God, and I'm going to glorify him with it while being responsible but generous. Okay, weirdo. You do you. And then you're constantly made fun of. How many kids are you going to have? You're like a rabbit, right? When we keep God's commands and we follow what he teaches, we will inevitably suffer. We will certainly suffer because of sin. The question is, what are you suffering for? Is it because you're giving in to vice and the ways of the world and the lies of the evil one? That suffering is painful, but it's also profoundly empty and hopeless. God's own word assures you, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. The scriptures throughout speak of this. The drunkards, the fornicators, the sodomites, etc., will not enter the kingdom of heaven unless we die to ourselves and our passions and live the dignity that God has created us in his image and likeness, by keeping the commands. Or we suffer for the sake of the gospel. And that's a very different kind of suffering. It hurts. We can feel lonely. We can be isolated. We can be persecuted. We can lose jobs. We can make less money. We can work harder. We can lose friends. We can lose family. But in the end, there's that profound peace and joy recognizing, Lord, I suffer this for you because you suffered for me on the cross. Too often, Catholics have been caught up in this prosperity gospel, the lie that if you are faithful to God, you won't suffer. If you think positive thoughts, you'll be healthy, you won't get sick, and you'll be rich. The promises of the false prophets of today, and they entertain you with really beautiful, incredible praise and worship music. And there's a stage, and there's lights, and it's entertaining, and you can bring coffee into worship and sip away and hang out, and there's social events and all kinds of activities, nothing of which has to do with what Christ did on Holy Thursday on the Last Supper when he commanded us, take this, all of you, and eat it. This is my body. Take this, all of you, and drink it. This is my blood. Do this in memory of me. The divine command of Jesus is completely thrown out and ignored. But it's really entertaining. And they hear this message that if I worship God, I'll somehow become healthy and rich and wealthy and powerful and comfortable and everything will be great, just like how Jesus died. No, we don't worship Christ on a lazy boy, drinking expensive champagne and eating expensive foods. We worship Christ crucified, naked, crowned not with gold and diamonds, but with thorns, between two thieves, humiliated because he spoke the truth, even to those who thought themselves to be the most holy. And because of it, like the prophets of old, Christ himself suffered the same fate. Remember in the Gospels when Jesus from the Mount of Olives, looking down upon Jerusalem, cried, Lord, O Lord, how I wish to gather Jerusalem under my wings as a hen gathers her chicks, but you would not listen. You have killed and stoned the prophets before you. You will do the same to me. Jesus mourned over them because they would reject his love rather than turning to the Lord and being faithful to him by keeping his commands. If you read the Hebrew scriptures or the Old Testament, what we find time and time again is they prospered when they were faithful to the commandments and they suffered horribly when they were not. Because when they were not, they rejected God's protection, God's providence, God's presence. When they were faithful to the commandments and the suffering that it endured and the consequences of that, they were protected and prospered and were filled with peace and everything they needed was provided because they depended on the Lord. But throughout the Old Testament, over and over and over again, they fall back away from God. They fall into worshiping false gods. And God withholds his hand from them and leaves them to their own vices. And that's the conflict that many Catholics experience today. They come to Mass, they have one foot in worship, but then outside of church, they live like everybody else. Their lives are no different. They drink too much, they fornicate, they lie, they cheat, they steal. But I'm a nice person and I try to do good things. We're not social workers, we're Christians. And if we're going to follow Christ, it's a radical decision to say, Lord, I will die to myself to keep your commands. Because when I live those commandments, I become a better human being. I become in your image and likeness, free from vice and sin, free for authentic love, which even means speaking the truth lovingly to those who have fallen away. Notice how Jeremiah was initially spared from dying in that cistern because Ebed-Melech came to the court officials and spoke to his behalf. What are you doing to this prophet? He's only spoken the truth. He's going to starve to death in that cistern. Let him out. He risked being killed himself for saying that to the king, but he was willing to risk it in defense of the prophet. Do we do the same? Are we willing to stand in defense of our faith? Or when people criticize it in their ignorance, do we remain silent? What are we suffering for? Because what is, one thing is certain, we're all suffering. The question is, what for? And so the author to the letter of the Hebrews reminds us, brothers and sisters, if you choose to follow him, if you choose to truly live your faith as a relationship with Jesus, responding to his initiative of love by keeping his commands, then remember, we're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. Let's get rid of every burden and sin that clings to us and persevere in running the race that lies before us, keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus. For the sake of the joy that lay before him, he endured the cross and, despising its shame, has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of God. At the end of the day, in your struggle against sin, you have not resisted to the point of shedding blood. Therefore, persevere. Don't give up. Die to sin. Leave behind the ways of the world and follow him. And then, and only then, will you know the joy of his promise, if not in this life, certainly in the next.